Welcome to the Full Potential Podcast. I am your host, Nick Wagner Sr., and every week I interview guests that share career stories, ideas, and experiences to empower and inspire people to reach their full potential. If you enjoy the episode, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google, and Spotify. Thanks for listening. Yasin is standard. Welcome to the Full Potential Podcast. I'm thrilled to have you tonight.
Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
I think people are really going to be inspired by your relatively short, but I would say very unique career journey. You've done a lot in a short amount of time in your working career, which we're obviously going to dive into, which is going to be great. But why don't you share a little bit about yourself first? How do you introduce yourself to people? Maybe tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So I say, hi, my name is Yasin Stannard. First off, a lot of people kind of struggle with my name because the J sounds like an English Y. So it's Yasna. So I have a background Slovenian and Czech and then English. I grew up south of Boston, went to school in the Midwest at Purdue University, started off in engineering and then switched out of that. That would be my first big pivot. We'll probably get into that later. And down the road, I'd say I started a couple of businesses, mainly in the social sphere, social impact, social business, nonprofit. I think you can define me as a serial entrepreneur, which usually means that you start a business, grow it up, make it successful, and then hand it off to somebody. I'm delusional, and I'll usually just hold on to all of them. So I'll do that, and then I'll do other projects and initiatives on the side. So that's usually how I describe myself.
And we'll talk about a lot of the topics that you just hit on, but why don't we start with a little bit about, you know, how you ended up going to school and why you went to college. So I guess my first question is, I love to ask this. If we go way back to when you were a little girl, was your dream to be an entrepreneur, or did you have a dream to be something else when you grew up? Like, what did you want to be when you grew up as a little kid?
So I love your podcast and I have watched many episodes. So I know this question right off the bat, and I was thinking about it knowing that I'd be on your series later. And that's a tough one because I had so many different goals when I was little. My mom's side of the family has a farm in Michigan, about 300 acres. So when I was really little, I was like, I'm going to be a farmer, which is tough work. It's no joke. Probably wanted to do that for a couple months, probably when I was 8. I think the thing that lasted the longest was that I wanted to be an astronaut. I think that's the joke at Purdue University is that everybody wants to be an astronaut because we have so many students that graduate, go to NASA. And I think we've graduated like 30% of everybody that's either gone up in space or works at NASA. That's probably the thing that I wanted to do the longest.
I mean, that could happen. I mean, let's be honest. There's a lot more people going to space now than ever before. And yep. I think in our lifetime, it's probably going to be pretty common. So you may be able to make that happen. But when going from farmer to astronaut, you ended up going to college. Mm-hmm. Was the expectation that you were going to go to college, or was that, your own decision to make? How did that play out?
I think there was definitely a precedent that I was going to go to college. It wasn't really a question of what do you want to do later in life? And then like, let's get there. It's more of you're probably going to need a college education to do whatever you want to do, whether it's being a chocolatier, which I also wanted to do that at one point. Well, I would need to go to culinary school. I wanted to be one of the first UN ambassadors that was also an engineer. You have to go to school for that. Both my parents went to school. I was very fortunate to have parents that were very well educated. But my mother was first generation to college, and her father, so my grandfather, was a farmer and set a very heavy expectation on my mother and my uncle and aunts to say, you are going to go to college. Like, it doesn't matter if we're in debt, you're going to go.
Yeah, I asked that question because I feel like it's such a huge impact from your family typically on what you do after high school. So I appreciate you sharing that. Now, let's talk about, you went to Purdue. You mentioned you had a change in majors. Mm-hmm. You graduated with a political science degree.
I did.
But you started as an engineer. So what, and I feel like maybe you didn't graduate with an engineering degree, but you're definitely still that type of person that likes to like tinker and try things and innovate, right? So like, you definitely have that engineering mindset, but why change? And for, I think a lot of people listening, like, changing your major in college is not uncommon. I changed mine. Many people I know changed, but why did you change?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And there's a couple of college students I mentor right now. And for those who are unsure in their major, I'm like, think about it now. If you want to change, do it now, because it's so much more difficult to do it later in life. Not that you shouldn't if you want to in a decade or two after college, or four decades after college, but it's just easier to do it when you're in college. And like, whether it's as a freshman, you're pursuing engineering, which my friends did, and then their senior year, they wanted to be a chef. And then they went back for another 4 years being a chef.
Wow.
So I pursued engineering. Both my siblings pursued engineering. So I went in with material science engineering. But backing it up a little bit, which is probably one of the big first stories, was freshman year in high school, I started an initiative collecting toiletries for homeless shelters. And it started off rather successful just in Massachusetts where I was at. And it grew to about 8 states by the time I was a senior in high school, mainly working with hotels. Sorry, what was it?
Oh, no, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
And then I like let that go for my freshman year in college, thinking like that's just that thing I did in high school. It still went on without me, which was very endearing. And then at the end of my freshman year in college, I pursued a co-ed business fraternity, Alpha Kappa Psi, which I think is really important for anyone that's pursuing a major to also have, you know, accompanying it with business. So like a lot of people do that where they'll get an MBA afterwards. So I wanted to have a little bit of business with engineering. I got in, I became the service chair right away. And then I went to the president of my chapter before I had even gone to a chapter meeting. And I said, hey, I have an idea for a service event. I need your signature on a letter I'm going to send out, but heads up, it might get pretty big. And he said, okay, have fun, Yasna. I said, no, seriously, it might get big. And within 2 weeks, we were in 35 states. And the end of the year, we were in all states, 120 universities. So by the end of my sophomore year in college, it was either drop out of college and do that full time or pick an easier major. And my parents were not okay with me dropping out.
So I want to back up to the initiative you started your freshman year, which was collecting the toiletries and helping people. Where did that idea come from? Like, were you talking with, you know, someone that you found had a need and you just thought you could help fill it? Like, how did that happen?
Honestly, it came from my mom. So when I was a freshman, my brother was a senior in high school, and she suggested that as a bonding activity, my brother do it with his soccer team for volunteering. And my brother wasn't really into it. I was like, I'll do it. I'm in student council. Like, we need a volunteer activity. Well, then freshman year, we do it. We get like 800 items donated. And I think a big way I describe myself is as an ideator or an idea machine. So if you give me one idea, Nick, like I'll pair 100 with it, and my brain will be going like, you should talk to this person. And I remember a podcast 4 years ago I listened to, and that has to do with what you're doing. So every year I just kept making it bigger and thinking like this could be, you know, bigger next year, and we could partner with these people next year. And I'm 16 and going to go put on a blazer that I got from Goodwill and look like a fool with braces and a really bad bun up in my hair and go talk to the manager of a hotel and say, I like your toiletries.
No, I absolutely love it. And, you know, I like how we talk about you being entrepreneurial, but you're also obviously super philanthropic at the same time, which I think pairing those together is wonderful. I guess my question for you is, where did this entrepreneurial like spirit come from? Was it a family? Was it your family? Was it where did that inspiration come from?
It's probably definitely my family. I didn't think it was for the longest time. So like in college, and when my first nonprofit was absolutely exploding and I was getting interviewed a lot, people would ask me that question and say, did your family help you? And I'd flat out say, no, they didn't help me. But they say, did they have an influence on you? And I'd say, no. But looking back on it, they must have, because both my parents own businesses. And they are very, I consider my parents to be very Renaissance. So they'll dabble in a little bit of everything. So it's like side hobbies. My dad learned how to restore frames, and my mom's an artist, but she's technically in industrial design. And my dad's a professor, but he's also in dental materials. And yeah.
I love that. I wanted to just ask, you know, kind of ask that just to kind of set the stage for the rest of your career. But so back to college. So you do this service event as part of your business fraternity, and it explodes. Like, can you share what that was? And you said you had to make a decision. Do I pick an easier major and stay in college, you know, and to keep doing all this service work, or do you leave? Right. So tell me what was that like? What was that decision like?
It was tough. It was really, really tough. I jokingly say that I'm the black sheep of my family, because I think there's like 30 engineers in my family, and I'm the only one who's like, I'm going to go do this other thing, and it's going to work out, I promise. And it's a nonprofit and it makes no money. but yeah, if I'm being very frank, Purdue is not a university you go to for a political science degree. I got a lot out of Purdue. I'm super thankful for Purdue. I bleed black and gold through and through, but Purdue has like 20 plus disciplines of engineering. They're not a political science school.
Right.
So yeah.
So what, and tell us about like, what was this initiative that you were doing that you were spending so much time on that was part of the business fraternity?
Yeah. So the first 2 weeks, just sending out an email to universities saying like, hey, do you want to get on board with the service idea? And 35 universities right away say yes. And I was like, oh gosh, okay. And then we got picked as the service event of choice for every single chapter in the country, which meant I was speaking at all the regional conferences. Somebody in my fraternity said, hey, you should apply for the Clinton Global Initiative University, which is, I think, about 1,000 students across the world who either have an initiative or they already have a nonprofit in place and they want to expand it regionally. Well, we were already national at that point. So we were just like, oh, we'll focus on like the Chicago area, because Chicago is like 2 hours north of Purdue. And we got accepted the day before Christmas, probably the best Christmas present I've ever had in my life. And that was probably 4 months after I sent the email. And then 4 months later, I think, we attended the Clinton Global Initiative University. We actually had a table, like we were asked to present. And then out of, I don't know how many students from that event were from the US, they asked 6 of us to go to the Clinton Global Initiative America Conference, which was incredibly daunting because that's CEOs from all the major nonprofits of the US. So I don't know, 50 and up. And then I'm just there in the category of homelessness and poverty alleviation. And everybody around me at the table is talking about employee retention rates. And I'm like, yes, us too. Yes, we're having that problem as well. When we are probably 1,000 volunteers strong across the country, we're not paid. I'm not paid. But it just kept expanding like crazy, Nick.
And what, I mean, what did you learn from this experience? Because as you said, like you obviously didn't think this was going to probably become as big as it did, but what did you learn from that?
I learned a lot. Usually with small organizations, you have to wear many hats, as they say. There's this phrase that I have been having trouble remembering for years. Maybe you'll know it. So there's like failure to launch, which is like not being able to take off, but I cannot recall the term where you're growing too fast and you can't, it's not that you can't scale. You're scaling too quickly. I can't remember what that term is.
That's what it felt like?
Yes, it was bad. So like we had all these opportunities. I was going to the hotel tourism management career fairs at Purdue. And instead of me handing them a resume, I was handing them a business card. And I said, hey, I'd like to partner with you and get all the toiletries from every single one of your hotels across the country. And they're like, do you want a job? I was like, no, I don't. And they're like, okay, this is great. How do we partner together? And I'm just a sophomore in college and I have no background in logistics or supply chain. So I had all these different possibilities and opportunities at my feet. And I didn't know how to do half of the things to make the nonprofit successful. So I learned a lot, but I think I had good mentors around me, but maybe looking back on it, one semester, a break to just lay out a firm business plan would have been a good idea. Like after 6 months from that first initial email, we filed as a 501c3 immediately. And we filled out a 1023 EZ, which means that you're projected to make less than $50,000 in a year. We heard back within 3 weeks, we had our status. So we had our status going into the Clinton conference, which was pretty incredible. So there was there was a really bad stigma back then about dropping out, especially at Purdue for successful entrepreneurs. Like, I had a lot of friends going to Y Combinator, Techstars. They went out west, they took a semester off, or they did it in the summertime, and then they got seed funding, massive seed funding, and then they didn't come back. And they're technically not Purdue alumni because they dropped out.
And you didn't do that. You graduated in what, end of 2015?
Yeah, I took an extra semester having switched out of engineering.
And I mean, how do you feel that you were able to finish and still do your venture at the same time?
I loved it. It was awesome. It was great. I think at times I might have forgotten a typical college experience but I was also surrounded by fellow entrepreneurs where we had this system where we'd meet up at the coffee shop at 7 a.m. And if anybody was later than 7:10, they bought everybody else coffee. And we'd go to classes in between and we'd do homework intermittently. We'd kind of study for exams and we'd like own that coffee table all day long amongst the five of us. And we'd close out the coffee shop at midnight and we'd do it all over again the next day.
That's a lot of coffee and a lot of hustle. I love it. So what was, walk me through this, right? So ended 2015, you graduate from Purdue. What was, I shared with everyone earlier, like you had a very short career, and I usually interview people that are more senior in their career, but you've had such a diverse set of experiences already. I wanted to have you on. What was the plan after you graduate? Like, did you have a plan? Like, I'm going to do this when I graduate from Purdue, or did you kind of go into it, with a little bit of maybe uncertainty?
So that probably leads to my next really big pivot of probably a year after college. But before that, I interned at a smaller nonprofit just outside Boston my sophomore year in college with Horizons for Homeless Children, which is amazing. They get funding for play spaces in homeless shelters for children. Really good work, really tough work, just emotionally. And then I worked for the United Way in Boston my junior year, summer, and then my senior year, because I took one extra semester, I actually interned for United Way Worldwide in their international headquarters just outside DC. And that's another story in itself. And I love them to bits. And I did a lot of good work for them internationally when I was still in college. After that, I did have a lot of offers for different United Ways across the country. And I also still wanted to do my nonprofit, which was now called A Fresh Start. And I was like, oh, I'm going to do A Fresh Start. I'm going to take a full-time job. And I'm also going to do grad school online. That didn't work out. So I ended up actually working for, out of the offers I had for United Ways, I went to an extremely small United Way in Southwest Michigan. It was the same county that my grandparents immigrated to, and I wanted to make an impact instead of taking a job at United Way Worldwide. That's one of those decisions, right, that you look back on, you're like, I don't know, what should I have done? After working there for less than a year, I went back to Boston, worked for United Way, and then I did a lot of consulting for a lot of nonprofits, small and large. I think I started my second nonprofit after that, and then my third, and it just kept growing from there. Growing meaning I just kept adding.
So I wanna ask you a question. I think this is a really, right, really important point for my listeners. When you work for a nonprofit, can you share, like, United Way is an example, because working for a nonprofit is very different working for a for-profit company or, say like a federal or a state or local, municipality, right? So like, can you just share like a couple, not for yourself, but like when you work for United Way, can you share just like some of those experiences, like what it's like working for a nonprofit and why that's different from working for a for-profit company?
That's a really interesting question. I think originally I would have thought limitations and the limitations you have at one versus another. And I don't want to say one has more than another. I think they're just very different. So with a government subsidized organization, you could have a ton of limits, right? As to what you can do and restrictions and guidelines and parameters that you have to stay within. A nonprofit has a limitation that they're probably not going to be able to pay you very much So you have individuals who might want to do the bare minimum because they're probably working a second job, honestly. And the saddest thing for me, I find, is when you find out that the employees of a nonprofit can apply for whatever benefits that nonprofit is giving to the community.
Yeah, I can see that.
So I think that a lot of nonprofit employees can either have the limitation of being tired and overworked themselves, or they'll put their all into it and they don't have as many limitations beyond time because like they can put in work afterwards because they're so passionate about it. And to be very truthful, I just think people who work in nonprofit, they want to do it, right? Versus a lot of people in for-profit, when I talk to them, they're like, oh, I'm not happy, but it's a job. I was like, well, that's not great. Like, let's go find you something you want to do. But people in nonprofit, they want to do what they're working on. And then I think that the for-profit sector, the limitation is, I think their boards can probably be more strict. If you're public, your investors right. are having a big hand in what's going on.
No, I think those are some great points. I absolutely love, I think you nailed it, just the passion of people that work for nonprofits and what it means to them, the mission of the nonprofit and how they're helping individuals or animals or whatever the case may be. So I absolutely love that. Walk me through, you mentioned that you've started some other nonprofits. I want to hear a little bit about those, and then I want to talk about your current role. But share some of the other nonprofits that you've done or you've started, because you mentioned you've started two or three now. And what did you do with the Fresh Start nonprofit? Like, where is that today?
A Fresh Start sadly kind of fizzled out. So that was during the period of transitioning from college to my first full-time job and also trying to do grad school online at the same time. It was just overwhelming. It was too much to do altogether. I still went to conferences here and there, attended and spoke if I had to. It still continued on at all these universities and public institutions without me really orchestrating it, which was really cool. And then occasionally I'd be tagged on social media and I'd reshare it. But the bandwidth I had was very limited. So it kind of just fizzled out, to be quite frank.
And what was some of the other things you kind of started in place of that?
Yeah. So when I was at Purdue, there was this idea that I had for a event, kind of like a TEDx style event, you know, but all the speakers are social impact. They might have a nonprofit or they're thinking about having a nonprofit, and it's again TEDx style. So it's not like mainly in a city, but like it can be in smaller cities or it can be in university settings. And then it's not only them talking about what they're passionate about, what they're working on, but then also a call to action to say like, I need this kind of help, come find me afterwards. And it then flows into networking and then it flows into a startup weekend in less than 36 hours where we from start to finish helped you file, usually through a 1023 EZ status. And that was really, really exciting. Did that in college, partnered that with an entrepreneurship and innovation fraternity that I actually started, and then pitched it to a couple of major cities who were interested in it. The entrepreneurship and innovation fraternity went on to be very successful in its own right, which they coined themselves as Delta Mu Kappa, Delta being change, Mu Kappa maker, change makers. So they continue the event on to this day. And then also they are just running themselves as a fraternity and then expanding nationally, which is pretty cool. So that was 2 and 3. And then I started another nonprofit right before COVID. As you can tell, I already have, you know, frustrations about it. It was called Project Connect, and it was basically the combination of every idea I've ever thought of for the nonprofit sector, where most people would say, hey, Yasna, just focus on one subset, right? Of like in endangered animals, healthcare, public education. I'm like, no, I want to do it all. Don't make me focus. And so I would target certain communities that were struggling, go in, talk to those community leaders, do focus groups, and say, what do you need? I will literally find you whatever you need. Like whether it's, you know, educational programming or it's a new playground, You have some environmental hazardous, you know, waste, like let's talk about it and let's solve it. We started that in August 2019. By October 2019, we already had like support from public officials, like senators, state reps in 5 states. And then this thing happened in February 2020. I can't remember. And it just all went under. And we, you know, our funding kept getting pushed by a quarter and a quarter. And that's that. It was really successful for 5 months, though. Like, really.
No, I mean, I'm sorry to hear that. But I think, I think COVID has obviously impacted many people in many different ways. You know, and look, you know, I think you're definitely not alone in the sense of like you had to had an idea, you were trying to do something, and then and COVID kind of put the brakes on it. So I'm sorry to hear that. But at the same time, I think you also bring up a great point that like you've been super successful with a lot of things, and then some things don't necessarily work for different reasons, right? But that hasn't stopped you from continuing to innovate. So I love that you're sharing that. I do want to pivot because I want to make sure we talk about what you're currently doing today, which is, and this I think is really important for everyone listening. Right now, you're not running a nonprofit or your own entrepreneurial adventure at Launch Hartford, but you're working for an organization that supports nonprofits and entrepreneurial activities, which I love. And I just think it's a great pivot for you because it shows that you can be entrepreneurial even though you're not working for yourself.
Yeah, this
share about Launch Hartford and what you're doing.
I will. I definitely. This job, I would say, in a way, fell into my lap in the sense that I was very fortunate during COVID to have this reprieve and time to think about what I want to do next because I had savings. And I'm well aware of the fact that not everybody was that lucky. And I'll be super honest and say I had to go back home for a while. So then during the holidays of 2020, I visited my sister who lives in Southern Connecticut, and I was just searching for jobs online and this one popped up and I said, I've always wanted to work for an innovation hub. That'd be pretty cool. And then I got the job and my mind was blown. And I will tell younger people who are in college that you can say like, hey, this is my dream job. This is what I want to do. But just say like, this is my dream job for now, because you shouldn't be upset or have these, you know, giant ostentatious goals to say like, this is what I want to work for NASA and that's it. To be like, hey, no, this is your dream job right now. You know, you don't know what's in 10 years. You don't know what's in 20 years. Like once upon a time, the only place I wanted to work for was United Way Worldwide. And I did. And I loved it. It was amazing. This, I think, is really one of my dream jobs right now. It's incredible. I pinch myself every single day. My boss is incredible. I will totally shout her out. It's Michelle Cody. And she, I thought for a very long time, Nick, that maybe I was the problem and maybe I'm impossible to work with and maybe I'm too competitive and I come up with ideas all the time and that kind of scares people because I'm bringing something new to the table all the time and kind of pushing on them. Michelle's constantly saying like, hey, this is what we're doing, but do you see it in a different light or do you have a new idea or this is the way we've done it, but it's not necessarily the way we should do it. If you want to streamline it, change it, let me know.
And stop right there for a second. How did that make you feel?
Amazing. I mean, I pinch myself every single day. I really, really do. I'm so happy. I'm so, so happy. And it's like going to a toy store. When I describe Launch to people, I say, I work at a toy store because there's so much new stuff going on around all the time. We basically get to fund innovative ideas, events, and programming. And I get to have fun going to our partners' sites and their events and know that we're helping them push the needle forward. And like you said, tinkering, like I'll shout out Makerspace, love Makerspace downtown Hartford. People should go to it. People don't know about it enough. You get a membership and you have access to all their equipment and you can go tinker.
Yeah, no, I love how you've found a person to work for, which I think you bring up a great point as an entrepreneur. Sometimes you think to yourself, well, can I go back to work for someone? Yeah. And I think the answer is yes, if you find the right person, because they've embraced, you know, your entrepreneurial spirit, which I love. But why don't you tell the story about Makerspace? Because I know you just mentioned them and you did something really fun with them back in the spring of 2021. That I think you wanted to talk a little bit about.
Yeah. So I moved here in February 2021. And then in April, I had this idea. It was inspired by Dr. Jill Biden's Valentine's Day hearts on the White House lawns. There were words of inspiration on it, like strength, unity. And they were only up for like a day or two. And that made me really sad because I thought they were amazing and I want to see them up longer. So I went to the makerspace and I said, I have this idea. I need giant hearts made, you know, printed out of the CNC milling machine, 8 feet by 8 feet wide, massive things. And then I want to put them on the Capitol lawns and have words of inspiration on them, like love, unity, strength, and more. And yeah, and it turned around in like 3 weeks. It was this massive community effort, huge impact. And then it led to us turning it into a community event, like on the third week, I think, where there was a pop-up vaccination tent if people wanted to get vaccinated in Bushnell Park. We then had like 100+ hearts, mini hearts, go in the backside of Capitol Hill into Bushnell Park, which was really beautiful. We had a resource tent by United Way. So if anybody was negatively affected by COVID, so they need rent assistance, job placement opportunities, mental health assistance, they could go there. But it was also family friendly, right? Like there's food trucks, there was like 6 volleyball courts. There was music, dancing, chalk, bubbles, cornhole, everything.
Yeah, it's not every day that you get to make 8 foot by 8 foot giant hearts and then actually find a place that can help you do it. So I love that.
And most importantly, I should say, of course, it was inspired by Dr. Jill Biden to, you know, thank all the essential workers that, you know, had huge impact fighting COVID-19, but then also to remember those who passed on too soon. And I think it was very much so felt by the essential community of the fact that it not only went from the Capitolons, but then shifted into Hartford. So like the strength heart, I actually went to today and it's outside Hartford Hospital now. And I met a young girl who's fighting cancer, who just got chemo, and she's taking a selfie in front of it. I was like, do you mind if I take a photo of you real quick? And she's like, I'd love that. Make sure you use my hashtag though. I said, okay.
Well, I love that you're getting, they're still inspiring people even after you had them in the initial event. So I love that story and I appreciate you sharing. And it kind of shows us who you are, Yasna, just the whole idea of like, even in your free time, you're trying to do things to be entrepreneurial and give back and help the community. So I appreciate you sharing. We've talked about a lot in a very short amount of time with your career. And I always close with the same question, because I think it helps my listeners really get a sense of how you've been successful. So what is the one piece of advice that you think has helped you reach your full potential in your career? And I know it hasn't been long and you have a long career ahead of you, but what's the one thing that you would share with others that you think has helped you be so successful in so many different ways?
That's a really good question. Really tough one to answer, honestly. I would give a piece of advice that I don't take myself, but I am told constantly, which is take breaks, take vacation. My parents were visiting me this weekend and they said, let's talk about your vacation. I said, what are you talking about? They're like, the vacation you should be taking. I said, right. Yes, that I'm not doing that. And then I'd also say like to-do lists help me in a big way. I try to be techie. You know, there's tons of to-do based applications out there. I go old school with paper and I learned this trick from a famous CEO once upon a time that was write it down. And then the next day, whatever you didn't get to, you rewrite the to-do list. And whatever you didn't get to goes to the top of the to-do list. And then keep going with the rest of the to-do list that's for that day.
I love both of those. And as an HR professional, I will tell you, you should take your time off. It is very important to recharge. And you deserve it because it's a benefit. So please use it. And all the research shows that if you use your time off and unplug, you're actually more successful because you're recharged. So yes, I agree with you. Take your time off. Your parents are right. Listen to your parents. So I appreciate you joining the podcast. Like, fantastic career journey. I know you've probably inspired a lot of people in your, like I said, relatively short career, but I think you're going to continue to inspire people. So thanks for making time and sharing your awesome journey with us.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you. We'll talk soon. Be well. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Full Potential Podcast. If you'd like to hear more interviews, please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google, and Spotify. You can also connect with us on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And don't forget to check out our website, fullpotentialmovement.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing, and be well.